This is Holly Thompson sitting here with
Roger Saunders
from
the Roanoke Diversity Center.
Okay, can you start off by telling us where you're from?
Well, I was born in Roanoke and lived here most of my life. I moved to Richmond in 1980 and came back in 1984 and been here ever since.
Okay, so how do you identify yourself within the Roanoke community?
I'm a gay male.
Okay. How long have you lived in Roanoke?
54 years.
Wow.
With four of those being in Richmond. I mean, four additional ones being in Richmond. I'm 58.
Okay. Would you like to talk about growing up for a little bit? Like you said, you moved to Richmond. Would you like to describe that a little bit?
Sure. Well, going back a little further, when I was about five or six, I realized that I was different from folks because I would watch Westerns, and when a person got shot, I wanted them to take their shirt off so I could see them. And I didn't really know what gay was, but I enjoyed the guys with their shirts off, and I had a preference to the ones that weren't hairy, even at that age. And then as I got older and found out that that wasn't the way everyone was, I hid that, and it didn't even come out until 1984, kind of by accident with a personal situation that I had after I moved back from Richmond.
Okay. So do you want to tell us a little bit about Richmond?
Sure. I transferred up there with Long John Silver's. I was assistant manager, and it was the first time I was away from home. I lived with my parents until then. And when I moved there, I didn't immediately jump into the gay life because I was busy trying to work. And I went to a few clubs there and some gay cafe things, but I would sit outside and sit for an hour or so wondering if I wanted to go in because I didn't want anyone that I may know ride by to see me going in a gay club. So the hesitation was there, but once I got in there, I felt really relaxed and was amazed that there were so many people that A, I was attracted to, B, that were like me, and some that weren't like me because there's so many different facets of diversity in life.
Definitely. So, could you tell us a little bit how you came out? So you're talking about being in Richmond for a little bit. Did you come back to Roanoke and continue your life the way you'd be living?
I did. Well, while I was there, I met several folks and had several gay experiences. And one of the people that I met on my job was, I was a security guard, and he was a fellow security guard, but he had several side jobs. One, he was a stockbroker, and he was a local county cop. He wasn't a Richmond cop, but he was a nearby county cop. And I'm thinking, why are you a security guard, which is kind of a low man on the totem pole, if you're a stockbroker and you're a cop and all this? So you tend not to believe folks like that. Well, one night he took me to his office. He had a nice office, desk, name on the desk. It was his name. Then one night I had to take his shift. And my car had broken down, and it was after the bus hours, and I worked till midnight. He said, well, I can pick you up, but I'm on my shift doing the police stuff, but I'll pick you up in the squad car. But I got to hurry back because I got to get to the other side of the city. So he picked me up there. He was in full uniform, cop car, and everything. So everything he told me was true. Also along those lines, he told me that his favorite thing was to cut people, and he told me he killed people. And had a farm in Montpelier where his parents lived. And I said, well, okay, here's a guy that I didn't think was a stockbroker, but was. Didn't think was a cop, but he was. And so why should I not believe the stories he told me about hurting people and killing people and burying them in plots on his mother and dad's farm? Anyway, that caused a problem while I was there. I met a guy hitchhiking to King's Dominion. I was doing a bank run from Richmond to Winchester, and I saw the guy standing on the side of the road, and he was hitchhiking. He had no shirt on, and of course, ding, ding. So I ran to I drove really quickly to the place, switched cars to get the company car, rode back. Luckily, he was still there hitchhiking. I picked him up. We drove toward King's Dominion, and he said, do you know of any gay places in town? And I said, a few. And we got to talking. I gave him my number, and the next week we wound up together. temporarily. But over the course of the next year or two, with my friendship with the cop stockbroker guard and this guy, because I knew what this guy was, he was a hustler. He didn't just do things for the fun of it because he loved women. And so I said, the things that the stockbroker cop guy wanted to do or did do with guys sexually, this other guy didn't do because he was straight. So I told the stockbroker cop guy that he would never have the other person, which was my favorite person at the time. So that made the stockbroker cop person make up his mind he was going to have the other guy, just to make me mad and to prove he could do it. So I went to Winchester and came back one day and came home. The back door had been kicked in. The guys were in the house. The guy, my guy, was told by the cop that it was okay to break it in. He's a cop. So he broke the door in, and they did their thing. And I came home and saw this and was upset on several levels. One, there was a break into the house. Two, a cop did it. Three, they had, you know, sex and it was my guy. So there was jealousy there. So I just acted like nothing happened. I changed my clothes and I left. I immediately went to a phone, called mom and dad, told them that there were some issues at the house and that I needed to come home. And the next day, dad came up with a U-Haul and we moved back to Roanoke. Again, they didn't know why I was having these issues or that I wanted to move back. So once I got back, over the a few months, my dad passed away, and before that, I had told him I was gay, and I was glad that I did, because again, I wanted him to know before he passed away. But prior to him passing away, I got angry at this guy that I liked, because he came back to Roanoke to visit me, and wouldn't have sex with me after I'd gone to Richmond and picked him up. So when I came back, the guy was at a storage building that I had, and I just locked the car. I mean, I left him in the car. I took the key, and I walked home. As I got toward the house, and it was 2 or 3 in the morning, I said, I don't really like what's going on. I don't like my life. I don't like that he's treating me like this. And so I just continued walking down Shenandoah Avenue, walked downtown, walked over toward Tanglewood, and I hitchhiked to North Carolina with $7 in my pocket in November. Had nothing with me except $7. And I was going to go as far away as I could. And I got to North Carolina, Greensboro, and I called back home to my sister who did know that I was gay. And I said, tell mom and dad I'm gay and see if they love me, see if they want me to come home, see if they want me to go on. She said, okay, call back at 3 o'clock. This was way before cell phones. So I called back at 2 o'clock, and she said, oh, everything's fine. Come on home. They'll come down to get you. Stay right there where you are. So I sat around, waited for them. They picked me up at the Krispy Kreme. Everybody knows the Krispy Kreme in Greensboro. So they picked me up, and on the way home, I slept because I hadn't slept for a day or so. And I get home, and I walk in the door, and I said, well, I'm going to bed. I'll see you guys later. And Dad said, sit down. We need to talk. So I sat down, and I said, what do we need to talk about? He said, why did you hitchhike to Greensboro? My sister had not told him anything and ambushed me, and I was sitting there having to just let it all out. So I told my dad that I, short story, I just, to him, I just said, if I see a guy and a girl walking down the beach, I'm going to look at the guy. He said, well, all you need to do is be with a girl and you'll be okay. I said, no more, that'll work no more than you being with a guy is going to change you. Anyway, we were friendly, and they accepted me, and 5 or 6 months later, he passed away, and mom loved me. I think she was disappointed in the fact that I couldn't give them children on that side because I'm the only son. But that's when they found out, and that was 1984.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing that with us. So you did talk about the police, like your friend was a police officer. How in that time did the police like affect people that were like gay specifically, or did they target them? Did you have an experience with that?
I didn't have it in Richmond. There's a place there. It's a World War II memorial called the Carillon or the Carillon, and it's a huge monument. It's rather phallic looking, but anyway, that's where all the gay people went to meet. So I met several people there, and when I came back to Roanoke, that's where I noticed some of the stings and the changes in the parks to try to alleviate people being gay, basically. We did have the bar of the park, but only open 3 or 4 days a week. The only other place to meet folks were in parks, and they would do stings and set people up. I mean, just put undercover cops out there, and then if you approach them, you get arrested. At one point, I think they arrested 23 people in one night. One sheriff took over several years ago and cleared all the brush up the side of Highland Park over next, overlooking the railroad track right at the dog park, so that guys couldn't go over there in the bushes, or if they did, they'd be seen. So they were doing everything they could to eradicate gayness. Like, they couldn't do that, but they just wanted to get it off the, out of the, out from in the open and off the streets, so to speak. There was also an area around, well, it's across the street from Elmwood Park, between the park and the interstate. And there was a little, just a little L street in there, and they called that the Butcher Block. And there would be boys there every night. And you could go over, pick up the one you wanted, talk to them a little bit, take them somewhere, bring them back. But there toward, I guess, 1983 or so, the cops cracked down on that, and you couldn't find these guys anywhere. Also, during right after that time, the internet started blowing up, and that's where people started meeting folks, and it got easier and also a little more dangerous to meet people. But that's the only thing I really remember. Those stings. They had a big one in Wasena Park. The neighbors in Wasena Park thought that every gay person was out to molest their kids, so the police kind of cleared Wasena Park out. And recently, over the last 5 years, they put the greenway in, which alleviated the possibility or the ability to drive from one side of the park through the other and sit and talk. We used to sit and talk with our friends for hours, and there was no sex at all. We just hung out there. And then they took that road out, and you could only walk through there, and it kind of, that was another reason. You know, it was for the greenway. They could have moved it a different way or had it a different way, but I think that was another way to kind of crack down on gayness in the parks. That happened not long after the sheriff came in and had the guys tear up all the trees and bushes over next to the railroad track up the hill for people to hide.
Okay, definitely. So what has your experience with nightlife in downtown Roanoke been since you've been back from Richmond?
Okay, when I left, I think the park was there, but I didn't know anything about it. I rode by it once, and it said private club, and I didn't really know what that was. I knew we had the Moose Club and the Elks Club, and I said, what kind of club is this private club? So I didn't go in for years. When I got back from Richmond, I heard about Backstreet, and back then Backstreet was a gay bar. As right now it's a heavy metal bar or just a bar in itself. But back then, being a gay bar, I did my Richmond thing. I pulled up and I watched to see who went in, see if there was anyone I knew, because I didn't want anybody I knew to know me and get me out at work and get me fired. So I sat there for about an hour, again, just getting up nerve to go in. One night I was there, kind of a funny, not funny story. I had heard about this person, very famous drag queen in town, and that person drove up. I knew of them, and they were followed by another person that I knew fairly well, and they argued in the street, and the person that was the drag queen was going into the bar, and the other person ran behind them arguing with them and hit them in the head with a hammer. Didn't hurt them very much. There was, you know, they got up and went only in the bar, but that night I decided not to go in. Years later, I wound up dating the drag queen person for 3 or 4 months. But anyway, the other part of being the nightlife part was when you went to the park and it was a real busy night, they had a line out the door, and the door was on the right side of the building, and the building was rather wide. So the line, if it was real busy, the line would stretch down almost a half a city block. So you were lined up against the wall. I tried to plan it so the line, I would get there early enough so I wouldn't have to stand in the line, because there were fears of people riding up and down the road that were already calling everybody faggot this, faggot that, and you didn't know when somebody was going to get a gun and just go pow, 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 because we were all lined up like ducks in a row. So that was a scary time, because you just didn't know what would happen with the hatred that was everywhere.
So you mentioned discrimination at work, like you couldn't let people know that you were gay and you'd be get fired. Could you explain a little bit about that? Like, did that happen just in your field, or was it throughout the whole community?
Well, you heard stories back then of people being disowned by their families, beaten. Right around the time it was Matthew Shepard being killed, and probably others killed that you didn't hear about. But I didn't feel that at my work once I was comfortable going to the bars, because my boss's brother was gay, and I saw him at the park, and I felt a little better about that. So I knew at least my boss accepted me. And over the years that I worked there, which was an insurance company, it was Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, they accepted partners on your insurance. All you had to do was prove that they lived with you, and they would cover them under your insurance, even though you weren't married, and marriage was not legal then. So I felt better at work over the years, but then it was just that initial thing. More so, I guess, people knowing me, seeing me going in, riding by, and being my friends and hating me, more so than me being fired, because right off the bat, I knew that the boss's son was gay, and I didn't think I'd have a problem with that. It was just the fact that friends, you'd lose friends just by telling them that you were gay, whether you were attracted to them or not, because of, at that time, a lot of folks were anti-gay.
So how did being discriminated against and stigmatized affect your relationships with other people in this time?
I didn't have any. I didn't have any friends that knew I was gay. I mean, at work, they may have thought I was gay, but unless I was really, really close with them and knew that I could tell them really anything, and it was a handful, I didn't tell everyone. I didn't have gay banners on my desk. I didn't say, hey, I went to the park Friday night or anything like that. One day I was across the street from the office. The office was on the fourth floor, and I was in the parking garage, and I had a significant other with me, and they kissed me on the cheek as they left, and somebody I heard later on said, who's that guy that I saw you kissing? So it kind of got around that I was gay, but I had to work extra hard in my job I worked extra hard in my job so that I would be more or less, in my brain, indispensable, so that if they found out I was gay, they would go, he's gay, but he does such a great job. In fact, I had a guy that was a good friend of mine that was, I don't know if he was anti-gay or not, but he he found out from another friend that I was gay, and he said, Roger? I didn't know he was gay. And then after he found out I was gay, it didn't change our relationship because, again, my worth ethic and the way I acted and carried myself at work made me look and seem no different from anyone else. So he was shocked that I was. Some folks don't have that luxury. You can tell they're gay when they walk in the room. And they're flamboyant, sometimes on purpose, sometimes they can't help it, and sometimes it's just them being themselves, and now luckily it's more accepted everywhere.
So did you have to sneak around your friends with this, like, did you keep it a secret for as long as you could? Is that where you're going?
Yes, I would meet my friends for lunch or whatever, and I would talk about my friends, but I would just talk about them like a football buddy, even though I didn't like sports and they knew I didn't like sports, but it was just, I didn't say, well, hey, I went out with Joe last night and we had a great time in the bed. I just said, so-and-so is my good friend, and sometimes they would see me with that person in the hall or whatever, and so I think that's how I kind of got outed myself by my friends showing up at my work and seeing us together, and I didn't have a girlfriend, didn't have, you know, wife, and didn't, you know, had all the things that other folks that are straight have, so that was the only thing I can think that would matter.
So did you ever, you were saying that they eventually figured it out, so you didn't ever had a specific instance of, like, coming out to your friends or your coworkers or anything like that?
Not really. The ones that gave me the impression they knew either told me they knew, and then I could share more with them, and we got closer and better friends. I just felt like the ones that kept it hidden, that never told me about it, that knew, if they didn't change the relationship with me, that was fine. As I got older, it got to be easier to tell people who I was and what I was because I didn't really care what they thought. I had a friend that was rather religious that moved to Kentucky, and it was several months after Facebook started up that I friended her because I said, she's going to see all this gay stuff. Well, then I finally friended her because somebody said, she lives that far away, she's not seeing you, she's not going to do anything to out you because you're already out here in town, so friend her. So I did friend her, and she'll comment on a couple of things that I say, but I don't know that she really likes or shares any gay things that I do. It's not that she doesn't accept me as me, but she's maybe not for the cause, so to speak.
Definitely. All right, we're going to change themes a little bit. Can you tell us about the concept of cruising and what kind of cruising has gone on or went on in Roanoke?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, there was that area called the Butcher Block, and they had one in Richmond too, but that didn't do well for me because I went by there. I couldn't tell the folks that were cruising than the ones that were people coming out of the library. Here in Roanoke, the area, the guys were younger. They were attractive and usually stood singly in the block as opposed to congregating in a group because a person is more apt to stop and talk to one person than a group. It was a very exciting time, but you picked up someone and you didn't know if they were going to hurt you. You didn't know if they were going to blackmail you. You didn't know if they were, I don't know, whatever, or if it would be a fun time. Of course, it always cost money. They weren't out there doing it for free. And I'd rather pay someone that I'm attracted to than have sex with someone that I'm not attracted to that's going to give it up for free. Because the whole idea of sex is enjoying yourself. And if you're not enjoying the body that you're with, why have it? Now, a relationship's a little different. I've had relationships where I was initially attracted to them. And then if they got chubby or if they lost weight or if they changed, I was still in love with them because I knew them back when I was really attracted to them. And I got to love their inside as well as their outside. The other part of cruising is people hear the term gaydar, and it is a real thing. It's kind of like a woman's intuition. It's something that some gay people have. I've noticed being with the Diversity Center that a lot of folks don't have that and don't know what it is. But you'll look around a room and you'll see someone, and if they're interested and they're looking back at you, they look at you in just a little different way. It's kind of like, I kind of look at it or equate it to the cartoons where the cat's looking at the mouse or whatever, and the mouse, you see the cat's eyes and it turns the mouse into a little dinner. It just makes, you can just tell that person is attracted to you, and so you act on that. Because back before recent times, you would see people in a bar, and a straight bar or a gay bar, and you, if you went up to them, you didn't know if they were gay or straight, whether they would beat you up or whatever for approaching them, because a lot of them have anger issues and think if they're approached by a gay person that you're thinking they're gay, and they don't want that to intrude on their manhood, and it just causes problems. The park, on the other hand, has become more straight clientele than gay, so you really kind of have to watch. And just a little side note about that while I'm yakking. You go in there sometimes, and there's a guy and a girl. And they're in a gay bar dancing because it's great music and great fun. But the guy's got his shirt off. Is he trying to attract the girl, or is he showing off for the gay guys? I always thought that was weird. And it looks like, if you're a gay guy and you see two gay guys dancing and they're not together as a relationship, you might walk by the guy and touch him somewhere where his shirt's off. And it seems like the girl would want her guy to keep his shirt on so that it wouldn't cause issues. But I just thought that was odd, and I just thought I'd throw that in.
That's totally fine. Was there cruising without money, without having to pay for it, because it was like hard to find like other people around?
There were other places. The parks were one of them. Highland Park was one of the biggest. Wasina Park was the other one. Just about any park in any state becomes kind of a cruising area. Go in after dark, and you just walk around, and people will be behind trees, they'll be looking, they'll be standing, and it's different than people just in the park laying out on a blanket or whatever. You can tell that they are available or that they're looking for things. And again, it's that scary thing where you don't know if it's somebody that's going to hurt you or if it's an undercover cop or whatever. I used to always go through, and if I saw the same person repeatedly, then that's who I might take a chance with. But most of those things were free, more or less. There were some hustler people that would hang out in the parks didn't hang out on the block. And that kind of went away because the cops cracked down on that and were arresting these guys in the park because a lot of them were homeless or on drugs or whatever. And when they couldn't provide ID or have a car there, then the police would take them in, and then that kind of cleared up the parks. So that the cruising thing in itself, unless you go to places like the park or other gay-friendly restaurants, you can't find gay people cruising in public, hanging out wanting sex. You can't find those as much as you could back 20 years ago.
Definitely. Do you have anything else to add about cruising that you could think of? Any stories?
Only one. I've always cared about people, and I picked up this one person one night and drove from downtown Roanoke to Salem, where I lived. Mom and Dad were off somewhere at the Moose Lodge or somewhere, so I had the house to myself. And we went in, and the guy lay down on the bed, and he had this strange look on his face. And I said, "Have you ever done this before?" And he said, "No, this is my first time." I said, "Why are you doing it now?" He said, "I need the money." I said, "Are you gay?" He said, "No, I just need the money." I said, "Get up, let's go." So I got back in the car with him. Actually, he put his clothes on because we had gotten that far. And we got in the car. I drove him back downtown where I let him off. I gave him the money I was going to give him anyway, and told him good luck and not to do things that he wasn't comfortable with, and because I wouldn't make anybody do things that were going to make them uncomfortable, because if I know they're uncomfortable, I'm not going to have a good time either.
Definitely. Are there any non-specific, like, gay community hangout spots now, like in Roanoke, that you would...
Like gay-friendly places?
Yes.
Okay. Well, one is what they call the Gay McAdoos. It's downtown on Church Avenue, especially the bar area. They accept you as you are, and you can sit with your friend, you can hold their hand, you might be able to give them a kiss here and there, but they don't kick you out, and it's actually no one under 18. You rarely see families in there, so it's kind of a I'm not saying it's an okay place to be gay and do obscenity things, but you don't have kids in there that you're going to be offending the families or whatever if you do so hold somebody's hand and they're not aware of it. But that's one of them. Lots others are that way. Back in 1988, I went to Billy's Ritz. It's now the bar called Billy's. And I sat at the bar with my brand new significant other that I just met that night, and we held hands hiding under the bar. And it wasn't wintertime, so we had no coats to cover our hands up, but we sat there at a straight bar holding hands. And that was kind of neat, but you were always looking over your shoulder to see if anyone was going to see and make it a bad night for you. But a lot of bars now are gay-friendly simply because they know there are so many of us. They know that a lot of us have a lot of money, and they don't want that money to go to some other bar.
Definitely. Well, what would happen in previous, like, times, like, not now, if you were caught holding hands with another man or out in public?
I don't know that it ever happened to me. I had a guy that I was in love with that his boyfriend, they broke up, and his boyfriend was hanging around me at a thing we have here in Roanoke called First Fridays. And we went to First Fridays. We drank, I think they allow you 5 beers. We drank the 5 beers. We went to Subway. We had dinner. And up Salem Avenue on the way to Back Street, we were walking, and he held my hand. And I said, "Chuck," I said, "you can hold anything I have at any time, but not my hand going up Salem Avenue," because I didn't want any trouble from folks driving by. I would walk on some occasions from my house over near Wasena to downtown or to another park over near Vinton, and on the way people would yell out faggot this and faggot that, but they never stopped, and it was mostly the way I was dressed because it was summer and I had clothes on that maybe didn't fit my age because my age was a little older than the clothes I wore, and that's just kind of me. But yeah, those are the only things I've run into. It's not really